Hey guys, it's Albert. We got a huge show for you this week. We're going to kick things off by breaking down the quarterback landscape across the NFL and the takeaways. And then to break down the situation involving the greatest quarterback of all time, we've got a special guest coming for you. And as always, we wrap things up with all your questions in the mailbag. Let's go. All right, welcome in. We are in this sort of weird limbo period that's way longer than it's been in the past. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And what we're dealing with right now is, I think there's just this gap between the combine and the beginning of free agency. I believe that gap's about 18 days long. It's usually a lot shorter than that. And what's sort of resulted from that, I don't know, there's an easier way to describe this than to say, I guess, a whole lot of BS, a whole lot of back and forth, a whole lot of conjecture over what's going to happen with this free agent, that free agent. And of course, the CBA thing is hanging around out there. So we're going to start with the takeaways. We're going to get to our guest. It's another Tom Brady related guest. I think you're really going to enjoy his insight into the way that Tom Brady's thinking right now. So we'll get to him in a few minutes. We'll have all of your questions, of course, and we're reprising the six pack because of coronavirus, and I'll explain that too. But we're going to start with the takeaways. And my first takeaway for this week, this limbo week that we're in, I don't think Tom Brady knows what he's doing or what he's going to do. And so it's impossible for any of the rest of us to know what's going to happen. So I figured we should sort of take you through where each of these teams sort of sits right now. The Tennessee Titans, number one, have had contract talks, I'm told, with Ryan Tannehill. That is significant because that means there's a real interest in bringing him back. They're going to have to make a decision on tagging him. And we thought we would know on March 12th whether or not they were going to tag him. That won't be the case anymore because the tag deadline has been moved back. And so it's actually going to be right at the beginning of the legal tampering period when that deadline is going to come and go. And so they could tag him at 11:58 on Monday, and now all of a sudden they're off the table as a Brady suitor. And so the Titans are sitting out there. I still think that that'd be one of the preferred destinations for Brady. The San Francisco 49ers, like I wrote this week, I think some of that interest was coming from the Brady side. I think it's something that the Niners have to discuss. I think it's very unlikely he winds up there. The Las Vegas Raiders, we've discussed them as well. I they're sort of another one of these teams that may be one foot in, one foot out. And then the Chargers are really interesting to me. And I just tell you, I think the Chargers are interesting because they've already made a move. Like, they traded Russell Okung for Trey Turner. And part of that was that I don't think Okung was going to play for them or didn't want to play for them anymore. But if there's one area that they had to sort of augment or fix, it was that offensive line. And going and getting Trey Turner, and then maybe you make a move on a Jason Peters or an Andrew Whitworth or a Trent Williams. Maybe you do something splashy there and bring in a left tackle to replace Russell Okung, where maybe you could even make the argument we've improved at left tackle and we've added an all-pro guard. So now all of a sudden the biggest deterrent for Brady to go there might be gone. And so now all of a sudden, if you've got a competent offensive line, you're throwing to Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry, maybe that becomes a more attractive scenario for Brady. So, those teams, the Bucs, of course, are another one who are going to throw their hat in the ring. And so at the end of this, I'm not sure that we're not going to be where I sort of figured we might be in December, which is the Brady doesn't have a better option than the Patriots, and the Patriots don't have a better option than Brady. And if that happens, I think maybe that's where Robert Kraft gets involved. Now, I've been told that Robert Kraft is not going to interfere. He's not going to swoop in, and if things are in a bad spot, come in and try to fix them. If there is a philosophical difference, I do not think that he will be interjecting himself into that. And the reason why is pretty simple and pretty logical. He knows that would poison the relationship between Belichick and Brady, and so there's no sense in doing that because things were already kind of in a shaky spot to begin with. If you sort of shove that whole thing off the cliff by interfering, you're creating I think a really, really ugly end to what already would be a tough separation. from between Brady and Belichick, and really a tough end, an ugly end to the dynasty. And so I don't think he's going to do that, but I do think there's a chance that if anybody needs to save face at the end, whether it's Belichick trying to stick to his guns, whether it's Brady not wanting to come groveling back, you know, that whole line that Kraft uses a lot, the elegant solution, I wonder if that's maybe where it is. If at the end of this, they look at each other and they say, you're best for me and I'm best for you, and they need a way to sort of save some face, maybe that's where Kraft comes in. So interesting scenario there with Brady. We'll see where that goes. It's going to be an interesting next week and a half or so. Takeaway number two, the rest of the quarterbacks are all on hold because of the Brady situation. And it's Phillip Rivers, it's Ryan Tannehill, it's Teddy Bridgewater, it's Andy Dalton, it's Marcus Mariota, it's Jameis Winston. Like, the pause button's been pushed on everyone else at that position who's free in what could be a historic year of movement at the game's most important spot. So I look at Rivers and Tannehill as probable starters in 2020. Nothing set in stone, but probable starters in 2020. I think Bridgewater and Dalton are guys who are going to be, let's say, sort of like the Tyrod Taylor potentially in that position, where the Browns brought Tyrod Taylor in 2018 and they wound up drafting Baker Mayfield 2 months later. It could be something like that, where you have a very, very competent, experienced starting quarterback in a Teddy Bridgewater or an Andy Dalton to sort of be the bridge guy for you to get to the younger guy. And then I'd say Mariota and Winston are kind of in the position Tannehill was in last year, where they need to go to a place where maybe the starting quarterback's on shaky ground a little bit, and so they can be the guy who steps in if things go wrong. And Dalton could be that guy in Chicago. So lots of moving pieces here. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with each of those quarterbacks. But until we know what's happening with Tom Brady, it's hard to say which way this goes. If Brady stays in New England, then Tannehill probably stays in Tennessee, then the movement's probably limited a little bit. If Brady goes somewhere else, then we're talking about something else entirely. If he goes to Tennessee, now Tannehill's out in the market, and we've sort of got a free-for-all out there. Maybe Tannehill goes to a place like Vegas, where there's an established star, now Derek Carr's available. And really, like the nuclear thing, which, again, I think is unlikely, would be him going to San Francisco. Then Jimmy Garoppolo would suddenly be available. There's just, I don't know, like, lots of moving parts. It's going to be fascinating to see how the next couple of weeks plays out. And I think anybody who tells you they knows what's going to happen is full of it right now. It's hard to say the way all this is going to go. Takeaway number three, Tua Tagovailoa gets a clean bill of health, as he said he would, on March 9th. He'll be able to resume, quote, quarterback activities. He hopes to throw in Tuscaloosa on April the 9th. That'll be about 2 weeks ahead of the draft. And so this is great. Obviously, we know this guy from an intangible standpoint, checks the boxes. From a talent standpoint, checks the boxes. And the health thing is important to check that box for him. I just don't know that he can do it fully. Even if things came back clean, and looks like they have come back clean, there were always going to be questions about his long-term durability. And so I think the question, again, assuming his hip's okay, the question now is going to shift from being about one specific injury to being about all of them. And so what teams are asking themselves right now about Tua, about what his future in the NFL is can he stay upright? And he has had two fairly major ankle surgeries, the tightrope surgeries in college. He got hurt a bunch in high school, and now he's got the hip. And so it's sort of an accumulation of things. And look, the way teams look at these things, a lot of general managers and coaches will look at a player who's been hurt a lot and they'll say, injured, stay injured, broke, stay broke. And if you look, it sounds crass, right? But if you look, the history shows that's the way it is. All right. Like, go back and look at the history of the position over the last 10 years. Look at the first round picks. Sam Bradford, 2010, comes in with injury history, gets hurt again. Jake Locker in 2011, Robert Griffin in 2012, Marcus Mariota in 2015, Carson Wentz in 2016, Deshaun Watson in 2017. all of those guys, those are the guys who came into the league with significant injury history, wound up getting hurt again. And that's a serious concern. I mean, you can say Mariota's career, Griffin's career, at the very least, those two, Locker's career, all three of those guys, and Bradford too. So the four guys that were at the front of that list, right, had all had their careers seriously affected by injury after coming into the league with serious injury concern. And Wentz and Watson, it's still a TBD. Things look better with those two, but they've still got, those guys have gotten hurt. Both those guys have had torn ACLs as pros. So certainly something worth watching with Tua. And again, it's going to be about coming to a comfort level with the idea that this guy maybe can buck the recent trend, can stay healthy. And maybe that comes down to adjusting his playing style a little bit too. All right, takeaway number four. I am having a hard time guessing what's going to happen with the CBA over the weekend, but my guess right now would be that it passes. And the reason why is because over 60% of players are on the league minimum. And most of those guys will only be playing in the league for 2 or 3 years. A lot of them believe it'll be longer than that, but the statistics tell us those guys are only going to be around for a year, 2 years, 3 years. And each of those guys, as part of this deal, gets an immediate $100,000 raise. I'm just telling you, if I'm one of those guys, it's hard to convince me after what I've put in, and it takes a lot, what I've put in to get to the game's highest level. It'd be hard for me to walk away from a six-figure sum when I know that 3 or 4 years from now, I could be looking to do something else entirely. And I just think that in this situation, the way the CBA is structured, the mandate on the NFLPA was go and take care of the core players. Well, this deal does do that. Now, it's got a lot of flaws. There's no question about it. But this deal does take care of the core players. And I've said this before. If the goal was, let's just keep getting rich, let's just keep making money, then this goal, this deal absolutely accomplishes that. If the goal was for the deal to be a game changer, it's not that. And if you want to argue that this was the time for the players to pursue a game-changing deal, I'm with you 100%. You went to 17 games, so you want to get something big back for that. You had the owners in a spot where they were the ones with the urgency to do a deal because they want to get to the broadcast deals, which will eventually allow them to go and start to monetize gambling. And so the players had real leverage here. And so it's a fair question to ask, did they use the leverage properly? But is this a bad deal? No, it's not a bad deal because it puts the players in position to make a lot more money. I've heard the cap within 3 years could be up to $260, $270 million, which is a market increase over where it is now, and which would mean the cap would be rising a lot faster than it did under the old CBA. And so I don't think that this is a horrible deal. I don't think it's a game-changing deal, but I think it's good enough to get that 60%. Most of that 60% to vote for it. And I think it'll be close. But, and again, I've been warned about, like, you know, players who are on the minimum, they pay attention to social media. That's where guys that age get a lot of their information. And there's some powerful voices on social media speaking out against the deal. Ultimately, I think the CBA winds passing. Finally, takeaway number five, the tag deadline has been moved to Monday at 11:59 a.m. That's going to make for a really fascinating Monday where we're going to have tags coming in for guys like Dak Prescott, maybe Ryan Tannehill, we'll see with him, and all the pass rushers, and then the tampering period is going to open at noon. So there's going to be so, like, just all of these moving parts at once. It's unprecedented. We haven't had it like that before. It's going to be really, really interesting to see the way that it plays out. So Dak, we know, is going to be a Cowboy next year. Ryan Tannehill, if he's tagged, he's going to be a Titan next year. To me, what happens with these pass rushers is really interesting because look at what happened last year. It had been in the past when you made a decision on a player, like on a star player who's worthy of the franchise tag, a lot of times teams wouldn't tag them because they felt like it was basically the tag made a player untradeable. Teams, that the trade market wasn't 5 years ago what it is now. And so, like, teams would look at that lump sum, whether it's $12, $14, $16 million, on a one and say, I'm not doing that. And if the guy wants a long-term deal, I don't want to give up both picks and a long-term deal. That changed last year. And the success of the teams that prompted the change, I think, could keep this thing going. You had the Niners trading for Dee Ford, who was on the tag with Kansas City, and you had the Chiefs trading for Frank Clark, who was on the tag in Seattle. Both those guys got traded. Both the teams that were trading them got significant draft capital back. Both the players wound up getting major, big, big multi-year deals. And so I think that's why we're going to see some of these guys, Shaq Barrett in Tampa, Matthew Judon in Baltimore, Yannick Ngakoue in Jacksonville, Bud Dupree in Pittsburgh. I think at least one or two of those guys is probably dangled out there in the market. I think Barrett's probably back in Tampa next year. I think Dupree's probably back in Pittsburgh next year. And Ngakoue and Judon are the two guys to watch where their teams tag them and maybe they start to dangle them around the league and say, we have a little something here if you guys are interested in coming and knocking on our door and offering maybe a first-round pick or a first-round pick plus something else. And so I think the creativity, the aggression of some of the younger general managers comes into play here again. So when those tags come down, again, the quarterbacks will get tagged. I think they're going to be back in their spots if they are tagged. I mean, Dak will be tagged if he's not signed to a long-term deal. Dak's going to be a Cowboy next year. If the Titans decide to tag Tannehill, that takes him out of the Brady sweepstakes. Tannehill's a Titan next year. Judon and Ngakoue are the two names to watch as potential trade guys. All right. And since this is the week of Brady, the offseason of Brady, all the rest of it, we're going to bring in our special guest right now to talk Brady. All right, and this week we're going to bring in a good friend of mine, a guy I used to do television with up in Boston, and a guy that I'm sure all of you guys are familiar with. He was the head coach at Notre Dame. He was the head coach at Kansas. He's also the offensive coordinator at the very beginning of the New England Patriots dynasty. Charlie Weiss, welcome in.
Thank you, Bert. How are we doing today?
We're doing great. We're doing great. And you look like you're having a fantastic time down there in Florida. It looks like the sun's shining. Life's good, huh?
Yeah, we struggle with the weather down here. You know, it was raining an hour ago. Now the sun's out and it's 80 degrees. So, you know, that's a life of life in South Florida.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not going to get too much sympathy from the Northeast. You know that. You're from up here, so.
Not looking for it either.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I do want to start with the whole Brady situation and just, you know, I know you said what you said on Sirius the other day. Do you really get the idea he doesn't know what he's going to do in a week?
Yes.
Okay.
Honestly, yes. Do I think that he's gone all over the alternatives in his mind? Yes, I think he's done that too. Okay, but I think there's two critical times. I mean, obviously everything leads to March 18th because with that number, that 13 million and change number that comes due as of the 18th, if he hasn't signed by that, that number would be tagged on whatever they'd have to pay him afterwards. I think the ship will sail at that time. So really, he's not really a free agent in my mind. Really, he's still a Patriot right now. And if the Patriots are going to get this done, I believe it'll be done between now and March 18th.
How much do you think he values being a Patriot?
Army.
How much do you think he values being a Patriot? You know, you hear some athletes say, it's the most important thing in the world for me to finish my career here, or I feel so attached to this fan base. And then there are other guys who just sort of look at it more as a business, and I'm an independent contractor. Like, how do you think Brady, knowing him as long as you've known him, how much do you think he values being a Patriot?
Well, he's a very emotional person, as we've all seen. I mean, you know, he's not like one of those guys that doesn't, show his emotions. So, I mean, he's been treated very well by the fans in New England. He's been treated very well by the Kraft family. But I think both Bill and Tommy both look at football more as a business. Both of them do. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. That's the cold reality that we're dealing with. We've seen it time and time again over the career with New England, where Bills let guys go that still had gas left in the tank, but it was, he felt it was the best interest of the team to go ahead and do that. So I think that that works both ways. I think Tommy would love nothing more than to end up, you know, finishing out winning a championship, another championship with the New England Patriots. I think he'd love that to happen. But the reality of this is he's taken a hometown discount for a long time. Everyone knows that, which is one of the reasons why they won all those championships. Because all that money that they weren't paying him, they could divvy up on other players and get good players in there. But that being said, I think that there'll be serious talks between them and the Patriots. And from my perspective, hopefully that gets it done. But if it doesn't, I don't think, you know, if he has to leave, he'll give one of those emotional, you know, thank yous and he'll move on. And wherever he goes the next day when he's in the next city, he'll be worrying about the next city. He'll be looking at it very, you know, straight ahead, no fair dodging. Let's get going. That's the way he'll look at it.
You mentioned how Bill approaches players, right? And I remember a story here. I remember talking to Drew Bledsoe about this, right? And this is when I went and visited him in Oregon. And he said to me, like, before he went back for the first time, he was almost intimidated by the idea, right? Like, intimidated by the idea of going back there after the way it ended. And he said when he got to Foxborough, and I think it was for his induction into the Team Hall of Fame, he was stunned by how warm and how nice Bill was and how interested he was in his life. And Drew said, I remember Drew saying to me, he's like, the guy is just so freaking disciplined about the way he treats guys who are working for him and like sort of compartmentalizing his life. And that I treat the people who work for me, like the players or the players when they're here, I can have a great relationship with them after. But while they're the players, they're the players. Do you think that relationship, do you sense that the relationship between Brady and Belichick is any different than one of those sorts of relationships?
No, I'd say that's typical of my relationship too. Mm-hmm. I get along better with him not working for him. You know, because, you know, you work for somebody. It's not you work just with him. You work for him. I mean, for granted, you do work with him, but you work for him. And, you know, that's just the way it is. It's this. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. That's just the way it is. So I think that Tommy and Bill will be, like you say, for all the friction we hear, I mean, when you're dealing with guys that are the best of the best, Bill the best of the best, Tommy the best of the best, throw Kraft in there too. Mm-hmm. You know, because his success is, you know, is unparalleled in the amount of time that he's on the team as well. So you get three big, big personas with big, with big personalities and egos that go along with that, that have all been able to peacefully coexist. But at the end of the day, Kraft lets, as much as Kraft loves Tommy, Kraft's going to let Bill make the call. Mm-hmm. He's not, a lot of owners would force feed the call, but he's not going to do that because that when he stepped away from doing that, which he did back when Parcells had the team, when he stepped away and did that and hired Belichick and said, you know, you run football, I'll stay out of it. That's pretty much what's happened.
And it's worked. It's worked.
That's right.
So do you think we've heard a lot about how, you know, like maybe Tom's like it started to grate on him a little bit, like how, you know, he is treated like every other player. So is what you're saying, does that mean if he's going there looking for validation or looking for Belichick to tell him how much he means to him, like he's barking up the wrong tree? Okay. So he's going to be 43 in August. He's got 6 rings. He's got a young family. He's got, I think, from the outside at least, Charlie, he has everything that anybody would ever want in life, right? And I think 99% of people would probably ride off into the sunset. You know him as well as anybody. What do you think keeps him going?
I think that I think he never wants to walk off the field feeling like he's walking off a loser. I think he wants to walk off a champion. Now, he is a champion, the greatest of all time, but I think that that's the way he wants to walk off the field. So, you know, whether it takes a year or 2 years, I mean, no, I can't guarantee, and I don't know, because I don't ask him. These are things that, first of all, we text, we don't talk, you know, because I know when I text him, he responds back. I know when I call him, he's the worst in the world. Just these little audio clips, you know, on your phone, mm-hmm. little audio clips that last for about 30 seconds and then they disappear after a couple of days. That, you know, that's what he leaves, you know, so untraceable. He'll never be held accountable. I don't ask him things like this. The reason why this whole conversation became news is because we were just trading Texas. I said, I found it comical that he was the talk of the town. You know, I said, some 42-year-old quarterback is the talk of the town. I said, you know, it seems like everyone kind of knows what you're doing. He goes, no one knows anything. And I said, well, they certainly act that way. He goes, hey, then go clean it up. So that's what I did. I went on the radio and said, look it. He just told me no one knows anything. And I truly believe in that text conversation going back and forth that he did not know what he's doing.
Do you think if he goes somewhere else, how hard would it be to recreate what he has in New England? And what I mean by that is, you know, I had somebody say to me, like, other people will be in that room and they'll say, well, why do you call this Oakland? Well, we call it Oakland because we ran it. We scored a touchdown on it against the Raiders in 2007. And I've also heard, like, he'll sit in the quarterback room sometimes and look at other offenses and almost get frustrated by it. Like, what the hell are they doing? What the hell are they doing? So you hear these stories, and it's just what I'm wondering, Charlie, is, like, after having 20 years there, after having all the experience he has with Josh and Bill, I would think it would be borderline impossible to recreate what he has, like an offense that's almost form-fitted to him.
Okay, how about this one, though? Mm-hmm. I'm playing devil's advocate. Wouldn't that be fresh? You know, the newness? You know, it could be reinvigorated. You know, it that's the flip side of that. You know, where you go in and say, hey, you know, what if whoever hires him, you know, says, you know, we'll put in the terminology that more closely fits what you're used to. And then he's helping in that angle, which is not really an angle he's really had to do before, because even though he's like a coach on the field, the Patriot coaches coach the team. Now, he might coach players, you know, hey, this is what I was looking for. This is what you should have done. But still, you know, the coaches coach the team. You know, I think that He almost could be reinvigorated by being kind of almost being put into a player coach mentality if he went somewhere else, because there's going to have to be some give and take. Do you agree? Regardless of how they do it, there's going to have to be some give and take. So yeah. there could be something to the newness.
Yeah, it was like what Peyton Manning did in Denver, where they sort of melded what he did in Indianapolis into what Mike McCoy and Adam Gase and all those guys wanted to do there.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with him. And so for all, you know, when he says he doesn't know, the last person that's going to now come up and say, here's what I think what's going to happen. You know, I've just looked at the situation that I personally hope it ends up in New England. That's what I personally hope. But no, I asked a bunch of people, back at the Super Bowl, Bert, I ran into a bunch of New England reporters and I asked them all the same question. It was a rhetorical question. Why is he a free agent? The fact that he's an impending free agent tells me that maybe he wants to go that route, or else he wouldn't be one. You know, he wouldn't be a free agent. He'd be under contract. You know, so void years, now you're free, and they can't tag you. I mean, you know, it all tea leaves would indicate that that's why he's put himself in that position. But that still, as you look at the Vegas odds, he's still a 1-2 favorite to end up in New England. So usually Vegas is not in the business of throwing away money. So you'd have to say that probably that's still the best odds.
Like, let's flip that around then. Like, the why is he a free agent question. Do you think Bill really wants him back?
I don't know the answer to that question. You know, I don't know if Bill thinks Tommy gives him the best chance of winning a championship this year. Okay, he'd want him back. But Bill doesn't only worry about this year. Bill is always worrying about down the line, too. Remember, you asked me this question a while ago, and I talked about both his insight and his foresight. You know, his insight's dealing with the here and now, what's happening now. But his foresight is looking down the road and making sure you're always planning down the road. You know, while you're dealing with your present situation, you always got to be preparing for what's down the road.
So that means I can't get a prediction out of you.
Oh, no. You know, you know, here's one thing you could tell me. If you could tell me, with guarantee me, what they think of Stidham, it might make my opinion stronger one way or another. But because I do not know what they think of Stidham, because he is a wild card in this whole conversation. Because let's say they think Stidham is Tommy. You know, let's say that's what they think. You know, not that anyone could ever. I mean, we're talking the greatest of all time. But let's say they're really high on him. No one outside the building really knows what they think of him. You know, Bill knows what they think of him. Josh knows what they think of him. You know, Nick Caserio knows what they think of him. But, you know, I have no idea what they think of him, other than the fact that they took him in the fourth round of the draft last year. I have no idea. I have no evidence, you know, of what they think of him. Because if they're really high on him, that could, you know, that could affect their thought process.
Well, I've heard they really like him, and I'm with you on that because he's 20 years younger and he's a lot cheaper. And that matters, I think. That's part of the equation, right?
Let's face it, no matter what, Stidham's going to be on a team with a veteran quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now, is it Tommy and Stidham? Or if Tommy's gone, is it Stidham and the veteran, or is the veteran and Stidham? In other words, which veteran quarterback they go get would be dictated by Stidham, not by the veteran quarterbacks around the street, because they're going to go after the one that fits what they got. Like, if they have to pay more money, if they're paying more money because the guy's coming in to be the starter, not to be the backup. If they're not paying more money, it's going to be because he's coming in to be the backup, not the starter.
Makes sense. All right, before I let you go, I do want to ask you, because I know you've looked at him. I know you have a little background because of your son. I believe you recruited him to Alabama. That's Tua Tagovailoa. Charlie Jr. was, I believe, he was an offensive assistant at Alabama at the time.
The offensive analyst, and he had the unenviable task, you know, because coaches are the only ones that can go on the road recruiting. Analysts can't go on the road recruiting. So there's a really big camp in Hawaii every year, this big Polynesian camp that's, you know, that I've gone to a couple times and worked. But he got the assignment, because analysts can do this and graduate assistants can do this too. He got the assignment. You go to Hawaii and you make sure that all those other Tua was going to come to Alabama. But all these teams were going after Tua. So Charlie Jr.'s job was keep him away, make sure that he stays wanting to be a member of the Crimson Tide. You know, that was not the easiest task in the whole world. But, you know, they forged a very, very good relationship, to the point that when I interviewed Tua at the at the Super Bowl, you know, he was kind of reserved. And I said, hey, I'm Charlie Weiss's dad. And he goes, you're Charlie's dad? I mean, it was the only time I'd ever seen a kid, you know, excited. And him and Charlie started trading text messages like 5 minutes after he was out of there and stuff like that. So I am a big Tua fan. He got a clean bill of health today. We had heard about that at the combine. Blood flows going through that hip. I love everything about the kid. I really do. I'm a big fan. Now, people talk about his height and people talk about the fact he's banged up 2 years in a row. But I think that, you know, if it wasn't the Cincinnati Bengals picking because Burrow is an Ohio kid, I think if it was another team picking that wasn't, that didn't have a, you know, their home state guy there, I think there'd be serious conversation about which one of these guys would go one. Now, Burrow had a phenomenal year. I don't know if it'll ever be repeated. It was that good. And, you know, there's a lot of things to like about him. But I think there would be a conversation. I don't think there will be. I think Burrow's clearly the guy, and Tua's the next guy. And then you could, if you listen to all the experts, which I don't, but if you listen to all the experts, half of them like Love from Utah State, and half of them like Herbert as the three and four. I think those four guys are all sure first round picks. And it wouldn't shock me if they're all in the top half of the first round, all four guys, you know, because obviously the quarterback is the most important position. I think there's going to be a lot of people trying to leverage their draft pick to try to get extra collateral for people to come up and get these quarterbacks.
All right, so let me ask one last thing about Tua then, since you do have the background with him, and you do like him. It sounds like you like him as much as you like Burrow. What was there one takeaway that you got from Charlie Jr. on the kind of kid he is, the kind of player he is, because Charlie got the chance to be around him?
He said, "Don't be misled by that Hawaiian, laid back, you know, hang loose mentality." He goes, he is a great leader. And you know how we've always talked about Tommy and that it factor? Well, Charlie told me, and I trust my son more than anyone in the world except for my wife, when he says, this kid's got it, Dad, then he's got it. And there's only two things, the two most important things for a quarterback. Do you have that it factor? And are you an accurate thrower? Those are the two most important things. People can talk about arm strength. They can talk about footwork. They can talk about all those things. But are you accurate? Is the most important thing physically? And off the field, do you have it? And Burrow might have it, but I don't know that firsthand. Okay, Tua, you know, I know firsthand.
Awesome. All right. So that's Charlie Weiss. I should mention Charlie Weiss Jr. is now the offensive coordinator at USF, one of the rising young names in the coaching scene. Right, Charlie?
That's what they tell me. I'm just Charlie Weiss's dad. That's all I am. That's all I am right now.
All right. So he's Charlie Weiss, former Notre Dame coach, former Kansas head coach, former Patriots offensive coordinator. Charlie, always appreciate you coming out.
All right. Take care, Bert.
All right, so I promised you guys I would explain how the coronavirus has affected the podcast, and it has affected the podcast. This week, we are unable to run our podcast through the studio in New York because they're taking precautions at our office, and so our producer, who you hear every week on here, Shelby, he's not able to get to the office. And so I guess, and I don't know how all this stuff works, I'm a moron when it comes to the technical stuff, but I guess we couldn't get it so he could ask me the questions. So instead of going through the whole thing where I give you the email address, I give you the voicemail number, this week we just decided we're going to do it the old school way. And that means bringing back the six-pack, which long-time listeners of the show will recognize. You guys know how that works, all the old-time listeners of the show. I put the call out for questions on Twitter. You guys respond. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a heart. That means I hit the little like button on Twitter. and to get an answer here on the pod. So we'll fire right through the six questions. Thank you, coronavirus. We have to go old school because of you. Question number one from Nick. That's at Nick_Collins14. Tom Brady's obviously the biggest free agent and domino, but what team seemed to be interested in the other quarterback set to hit the market? Rivers, Winston, Dak, Tannehill, Mariota. All right, so let's take Dak out of the equation again. I think he's going to be a Cowboy next year. In fact, I know he's going to be a Cowboy next year. And we'll add Andy Dalton because we talked about him off the top of the show. Phillip Rivers, I believe, is most likely to wind up in Indianapolis. I think he would also have an interest in Tennessee. I don't know that Tennessee has an opening. I think it's either Tannehill or Brady. I think the dark horse for Rivers would be Tampa. Winston, I mean, there's been no significant contract talks with the Bucs. The silence there is deafening. I think he's probably gone from there. If Tannehill doesn't go to Vegas, I could see Jameis Winston going to Vegas to be a backup / competitive piece, kind of in that Tannehill situation behind Derek Carr next year. Ryan Tannehill, again, if it's, I mean, we'll know soon, but the Titans are of a mind to keep him. I think there's a chance he's back in Tennessee. If he's not in Tennessee, keep an eye on the Las Vegas Raiders. And Marcus Mariota is an interesting one. Again, he's sort of analogous to Tannehill last year, the guy who wound up taking his job because he's sort of become this reclamation project. If Brady leaves New England, do not be surprised if Marcus Mariota winds up a New England Patriot and goes in maybe to an open competition with Jared Stidham for the starting job there. I think Belichick would like to change his quarterback economics if Brady's gone, which will allow him to build the team a little differently. And Mariota could be somebody who's available on the cheap. Andy Dalton's the one we didn't mention. Again, the Bears make all the sense in the world to me. Bill Lazor's there. It would make sense for them where they could, you know, go forward, and we'll get into this in a second, with their incumbent starting quarterback, but have some backup there. Question number two, and we're going to get to it here, the Bears situation. James Gargiello, that's at JamesVG10. Will Mitch be under center for the Bears in week one? I'm going to answer yes, James, to that question. Will he be under center in week five? Will he be under center in week nine? The Bears are in a weird situation. They're very much a win now team. You look at the makeup of the roster, how many of the guys there are in their prime. They are in a win now spot. They're also sort of capped out, and they're gonna have a hard time spending. They're gonna have a hard time augmenting even positions of need, and we've identified all of those. So, you know, it's sort of where if you're gonna add a guy, financially it's gotta work, and you know, you've got to have a guy who's gonna be ready to play right away. And so, you know, with a new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, who has background with Andy Dalton, I think Andy Dalton makes all the sense in the world. And so then I think you basically set it up like Tennessee set it up last year, where you're all in on Mitch still. You're going forward with Mitch. You hope that Andy Dalton lights a fire under Mitch. But if Mitch doesn't work out, Andy Dalton's there as a guy who's experienced, who's been to the playoffs in five different seasons, can come in and play. And I don't think the Bears need a superstar quarterback. That's the thing. And I think that's why Andy Dalton's a perfect fit there, because he's the kind of guy who can come in and drive the bus, who's going to be able to play an efficient game, who I think still has plenty of gas left in the tank. And so give me Andy Dalton there as the backup to Mitch Trubisky in week one. I do think Trubisky will be the starter in week one. You hope, again, that all of this lights a fire under Trubisky, maybe gets him going a little bit, but you do want to protect yourself because you are in that win-now spot, and that window you're in with all the star players you have on the defensive side of the ball, that window is not going to last forever. Question number three from Thomas Amato. Initial thoughts on mystery man Joe Judge in his first 2 months at the helm. I like what Joe's done. I think he's put together a pretty decent staff. A lot of guys he has background with, you know, Freddie Kitchens on offense. Obviously he's worked with him in the past. Jason Garrett, they've got a connection through Nick Saban, which is sort of how that one happened. Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator, somebody he's very close with. Jerry Shaplinsky, another guy on the offensive side of the ball. So for the same reason I liked the staff that Brian Flores put together in Miami last year, I like the staff that Joe Judge has put together in New York, because he's got some resources as far as former head coaches on the staff, and B, he's got background with those guys, and those guys have an idea of what he wants his program to look like. So I like that part of it. I like the presence is there and everything else. Obviously, the rest of it we're going to have to see. He's a non-traditional hire, having been a special teams coach. But I think there's a lot to like about Joe Judge. And, I mean, look, you're pairing him with a young quarterback. You're going to see where that goes. I like his first couple of months on the job. Of course, every new coach is undefeated until September. Question number four. I didn't realize I took two questions from James Gargiello. So you get two this week at JamesVG10. Odds the CBA gets passed on Saturday. I would say I'm going to go 51-49 at passes. I think it's that close. And I mentioned off the top of the show how this benefits all the minimum salary guys. I think the impact of social media is something to be heeded here. I've been told by several agents their players are paying attention to what's happening on social media. And if you look on social media, the no's are a lot louder than the yes's. And so where all of this goes, I think sort of a lot of it's going to ride on what those minimum salary players do and how much those minimum salary players are voting with their wallets. Are they voting with their wallets or are they voting based on what they see on social media? That to me is the operative question. Question number five. This is from Knight Who Says Nye at Con Connery. And I think he's got like the Sean Connery Jeopardy from Saturday Night Live thing going on in his avatar. Which of the top four offensive tackles in the draft has the biggest bust potential and why? I think Andrew Thomas is probably the safest left tackle. I think Tristan Wirfs is probably the safest, that he's just going to be a good player somewhere. I'm not sure where yet, but he's going to be a good player somewhere on someone's offensive line. Wills is a right tackle. Jedrick Wills from Alabama is a right tackle. I don't think he's much more than that, but he has a chance to be a dominant right tackle. I think he is fairly safe. So Mekhi Becton is the one. He's sort of the boomer bust guy, just aggressive, massive guy, athletic as hell. But his tape, it was a little inconsistent. And so I think you got a chance if you draft him to get a Bryant McKinney type player. The question is the motor there? Is the consistency there? And so that's why I would say there's a little boomer bust with him, but obviously a very, very good prospect who looks like he's going to go inside the top 10 now. Finally, question number six from Cam Shirky. That's at @big_Shirk. If Brady goes to the Titans, do the Raiders end up with Tannehill? I know we're answering lots of quarterback questions, but I did want to answer this one. And the reason why is I want to explain where I think the Raiders are right now and why it's such an interesting spot and why I think they would be sort of well-positioned for someone like Tannehill. The way I see it, they're on like a month-to-month lease right now. That's what it's like. And I've used this comparison before. When my wife and I were looking for a house in 2015, we were on a month-to-month lease in the city in Boston. And it was a great advantage for us because we weren't sort of pigeonholed into having to do anything at one certain time. So that allowed us to kind of survey the market, take our time, say no to a bunch of stuff, and eventually we found a really good deal. That's where the Raiders are with Derek Carr. He's like a month-to-month lease right now. They're out of the guaranteed money. What they have right now is affordable. From a quarterback perspective, he's under contract for the next few years and they're happy where they're at with him. But the way that it sets up is they're in a position where they're not pigeonholed into a single year to have to find his replacement. So if they find somebody who's better, great. If not, they've got the power to say no, which is a powerful thing to have. And so that's where I think they are with Carr. Tannehill would be such an interesting fit in Gruden's offense. He's got experience. He's got athleticism. And, if you look really close, you could even start to see some of the things that Rich Gannon was at the end of his career in Oakland for John Gruden. And so Tannehill is somebody who because of the cap space they have, it's not impossible to see, or maybe they just decide, hey, we're going to bring in Ryan Tannehill. We'll guarantee him the first 2 years and we'll let him compete with Derek Carr and almost have like this high-end quarterback competition. Would Tannehill agree to do it? Well, if he didn't have a spot somewhere else as a bona fide, no doubt about it, starter, maybe he would. Like the Bucks make some sense for Tannehill for me too. There are a few teams that make sense, but the Raiders, I think it's just so interesting because of the spot they're in. If they're going to go after Tannehill, do they get rid of Carr? If they're going to go after Tannehill, are they in a position to say, we're going to have you compete? Because of, the Derek Carr situation, whoever they bring in at that position, if the guy is the next starter, and this is different than bringing in somebody like Jameis Winston to compete, if the guy is the next starter, well, then they're going to be telling you they really like the guy because that means they're going to have thrown Derek Carr overboard. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we want your feedback. We value your feedback, especially this time of year when so much is going on. We're going to have you covered through free agency. We're going to have you covered through the draft. Great time of year for football fans. You guys get to see your teams being built in real time, and we'll be here to break it all down for you. So anything you guys got for us, you can get to me on my social media channels, at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert _ Breer on Instagram. And remember to listen to all of our shows, and you guys know where to find them, right? My show, the Weekside Podcast with Jenny and Connor. We get the Monday show with Gary and a cast of thousands. All those shows are on one feed now, the MMQB NFL feed, NFL podcast feed. And you can also still get the MMQB news. You guys know how that works. 5 days a week, all the news in one place, bite size, gets you caught up on everything. That feed and the MMQB NFL podcast feed, both of them. And I would definitely suggest you subscribe to both of them because you'll have everything you need NFL-wise. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time, next week, we will be in the midst of the tampering period, the legal tampering period. We'll see you guys then.